Welcome to the Automotive Diagnostic Podcast. We're going to explore ways to sharpen our diagnostic skills, find learning resources, and hear from experts in the automotive field. Hey, what's going on, automotive world? Welcome to another episode of the Automotive Diagnostic Podcast. My name is Sean Tipping. I'll be your host once again for this week's episode. Thank you for joining me. On the show this week, I have Tommy Oliva and Pedro De La Torre. They've both been on the show before. You know these guys. Got to see them at Vision. And they're going to join me this week to talk about information sharing within the automotive industry. You know, we have platforms like YouTube and Facebook, and there's a new forum on diag.net about module swapping. You know, we're going to talk about all that. But the topic here that we really wanted to tackle was when someone figures out how to accomplish a specific task within our repair world, right? Someone figures out how to clone a module that prior to was unclonable and you had to buy new, right? That's a ability that you can charge a premium rate for, right? Especially if you're the only guy in town that can do it, you can kind of charge whatever you want. You can set the price. But once that information is out there, and particularly if this is something that's easy to duplicate, once it's out there, and then 100 guys in town can do it, well, you're not going to be able to charge as much, right? And that's one of the big arguments about things like the module swap forum is that we're just putting all this information out there, and what's to stop just anybody from doing it without having to put in the work of figuring out how it's actually done? Right. And so what information should we be sharing out there? How much? In what way? And I see both sides of this debate. I agree with that, but I also go back to think, well, no one of us is going to figure out all of this all on our own. And all of us have had someone in our career that has been willing to help and share and allow us to grow. Right. So I don't think it should be a gatekeeper, everything secret. You have to figure out everything on your own. We're really going to, you know, limit our ability and the industry as a whole's ability to get anything done. But if you put in days and weeks into figuring something out and you put it out there and now everybody just copies it and people share it as their own without actually putting the work in, that is going to discourage you from really, you know, innovating and sharing with the automotive world. So where is the happy medium? Is there one? How do we broach this topic? That's kind of the discussion that I wanted to have with Tommy and Pedro here. And these guys are both leaders in our industry. And even though Tommy starts the podcast with a fart noise, I have a tremendous amount of respect for both of them and their opinions. So there's no two better people to talk about this on the podcast. Really great to talk with these guys. So I enjoyed it. Hopefully you will as well. With that out of the way, let's jump in.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help it.
That's one way to start.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Much better now.
Good. Thank you. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing good. Happy to have you guys here. Good to see you again. Just shortly ago at Vision, not too long ago. But how'd you guys enjoy your trip down there?
It was good. It felt too short. I actually got there. I was planning originally to get there on Friday, but I ended up getting there a day earlier, and it just flew by. It felt very busy.
This was the most busiest Vision I've ever been at. I was telling you off mic. I only sat through half of a class and then a full one with Justin, and that's it. Everything was go, go, go. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I'm just like, I got back Sunday. And I'm just like, Jesus, man, that was pretty intense, man.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes you come back and you enjoy it quite a bit, but you kind of drain just because it's just It's go, go, go. You're talking to people the whole time. You're doing things. You're running around.
I don't know how you feel about this, Sean, but I kind of like it's still surreal to me that, you know, like people come up, shake my hand and thank me. And I'm just like, dude, I don't even know who you are. Like, I'm going to tell Sherry, man, like, this is what we're going to have to do for next year, man. Everybody's tags has to have their Facebook picture. Man, some of these people look nothing like their picture, man. Bunch of catfishes walking around everywhere.
That's true. Like, even if it's a picture of your truck or whatever it is, just put that on the tag.
Exactly.
And we'll know exactly who you are.
Yeah, it's like your kids or whatever. Your dog or whatever you got there, you got to have it. We had said that at, I think it was ASTE, you know, because a couple of years ago, because that was the first event after COVID. And so, like, nobody had seen each other in years. And same thing, like, wait, you're Brian who? Oh, okay. I talked to you yesterday. I just haven't seen your face before.
We're in the same chat, right?
He's like, remember you called me the J word? I'm like, yeah, buddy. You're going to have to broaden that just a little bit more.
You sent me an eggplant emoji. Don't you remember?
All right. That narrows it down by like two.
Oh, man. No, but it was good. I really enjoyed it. And every year, it's always a little bit different. Get to meet some new people. And that's always the best part.
Yeah, for sure, man. And every year I kind of say, you know what, man? I'm getting busier. I can't go. And then every time I go, I'm like, man, I'm glad I went. And then it's a vicious cycle. I don't want to go. It's, you know, money this, money that. I'm going to lose money, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, man, I had so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make a lot of connections down there too, which is, I know I've said it so many times. People are probably tired of hearing it, but the networking part of it is worth the travel.
100%, man.
I don't remember who was talking about it. It might have been one of you guys, but it was saying, you know, instead of having a class, just make something, you know, a section of the day intentional. I mean, I guess there kind of is that with lunch, but where it's like, okay, we all just hang out. And like, yeah. That's almost, you know, good enough and worth the trip in itself.
Most definitely. And it's tough though, like for lunch, how you say it, or breakfast, because they always have the organizers, you know, set something up nice for everybody, maybe like times for the lunch, maybe a speaker, stuff like that. So, yeah, once you get rid of the routine, then it's a lot easier to just lay back and socialize.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's such a great event, man. It's truly a blessing of our industry that we're able to make it happen, even though it's a little bit more difficult for others because of the nature of our industry. But definitely blessed to have been a part of it, and Tech Talks, that was fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed all of the presentations, including both of yours. That was really fun to just get to see what everybody had. I liked that a lot.
Yeah,
it'd be nice if there was like I don't know if once you say it out loud, but if it was a full like day of just like entry level trainers just coming up with short case studies. And I think the moment you switch them up and you get so many different angles, I can only imagine if you're just there attending, it's got to keep you really engaged. You know, it's not like you have time to get bored because they keep switching it up on you and stuff like that. Because those few hours we were in there, they just flew by. At least for me, they did.
Yeah. I 100% agree. It's just like
the 20 minutes I was up there.
Well, just leading up to it, though, I bet you felt the relief afterwards, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Just like it was surreal to be up there, man. You know, I just still remember getting there and JT told me I should go. And I'm like, ugh. I'm like, I don't know if anybody remembers LenderTech. It was actually close to me. It's in Indianapolis, or it was in Indianapolis, and I really wanted to go there, and I never had the courage to go there by myself, man. And yeah, for vision, I don't know, something just told me to go, and here we are, 6 years later.
What was the first year that you attended, Sean?
2018 was the first one that I went to.
You know what? And that was a very, let me think. No, I'm lying. I had gotten there 2015. That was my first one.
Okay.
2015.
17 was my first one.
Nice. No, yeah, I definitely. It was an interesting one for me because I was at a hands-on Pico class that John Thornton was hosting at a shop,
Oof.
northwest suburbs of Chicago, and I had the great pleasure of being paired up with a gentleman by the name of Kurt Bourne. And he was like the nice. He is the nicest guy in the
Oh, yeah.
world, and he's just talking to me about vision, and he's like so excited about it because it's coming up. And at the time, it wasn't financially feasible for me. And he literally drove me up there, let me stay in his room, the works, and just because he wanted me to go, and just for the pure, just kindness, just to show me what kind of event it could be. And even though it was amazing. It was my first event. I was super shy. Like, I would kind of linger downstairs a little bit, but I was going straight to my room right afterwards. I don't know. I kind of like felt, I don't know what's the word, maybe out of place, which doesn't really make sense, but it was, yeah. It took me a while to get comfortable to kind of just try to socialize and just meet random strangers. And you have so many like-minded people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was the exact same way for I think the first couple times that I went where it's just like, yeah, I think out of place is a great way to put it just 'cause you're meeting so many smart people all weekend long and you're just like, "Oh man, I'm light
Yeah, why am I even here?
yeah, I'm light years behind everybody. I don't have anything to contribute." But yeah, where else are you going to gather with people that are as passionate about this stuff as you are? So that's why it's so cool. And now, yeah, I love it. I'll go getting down there and it fires you up for when you come back to kind of reinvigorates you a little bit to get back at it, back at the grind. So it doesn't feel quite as monotonous that next Monday when you get back.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, but we came back to some pretty interesting news.
Yeah, well, actually what had spurred me to reach out to you too was in your presentation, Pedro. One of the things that you mentioned amongst quite a few others was talking about information in this industry and how it's withheld or distributed, depending on which way you will look at it and who's in control of that. And it's a pretty interesting topic that I've been thinking about for quite a while. I have a podcast, right? It's public. There's information out there. Anybody can access it. Lots of people have YouTube channels. So there's Facebook stuff, right? And a lot of this info gets out and I see both sides of it. And I think that's why it's a really good conversation to have is because, I utilize a lot of this stuff to get information to work on cars, to figure this stuff out. But I see why it definitely harms us and the industry for everything to be out there for everybody, right? So yeah.
Yeah. Well, it all started that type of mindset was when I had when I was reaching a lot of stopping points in research or just trying to gather information. And I mean, we'll probably circle back to this a lot of times, but to kind of give it a quick summary is you could have somebody that has, let's say, I'm going to pick on the common one, a Snap-on scope, a Snap-on scan tool that has a capable scope attached to it, right? How many people own that and the leads are sitting in their toolbox? We hear that often. They don't use a scope. It's there. They paid for it. They don't care to use it. Fine. So it's a very conflicting thought process for me because if I put a lot of research into something or thought that I figured out something cool, I don't even know how to explain it. But yeah, I don't want it to just get out there without any recognition. And the thing is, it's not that you're looking for an attaboy or a pat in the back from people or anything, but it's usually just the recognition to make it at least feel worth it that all your hours and sleepless nights were worth something. That it wasn't just a 5-minute thing that here everybody pass it around and every time you pass the hot potato, it's losing value and really the meaning behind it. And when you're as passionate, and I could say within our group right now as we are about something, when you put that much work into something, or you know that your colleague did, it's almost like an unspoken agreement. Like, yeah, dude, like, that's awesome. I'm not going to go ahead and tell everybody and just give it away because I'm devaluing it. Now, on the other side of things, yeah, there's some information that some people want to hold back, but then it's like, if someone doesn't care to do, we're going to pick on the hot topic, right? Board-level work, memory manipulation, EEPROM repair module, stuff like that. You could have somebody in their toolbox have a tool that's capable of doing amazing immobilizer functions, board-level things, and they don't care to use it, and they don't want to. You have shops that buy an IM608. I go into their shops, and the tool's just sitting there.
Yep.
And all the EEPROM stuff still sealed up in a Ziploc.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to be able to share this information more freely as far as tools and availability. It's like buying a scope, right? If you don't know how to use a scope and you bought it, well, that's up to you now. You know, if there's information out there how to find something, where to purchase something, it's up to the user to figure out what to do with it and attend training and hopefully compensate and recognize any help that they're getting.
Yeah. It's funny because it's like we're all standing on the shoulders of somebody else in regards to something in the industry, right? Like, I think all of us can point to one or multiple people that have been, you know, like a mentor of some sort, or really like shaped us and really helped us out to grow in knowledge and in the field and shared a lot with us, right?
Yeah.
And so you think, okay, what if that person had the attitude of, I'm not going to share anything, figure it out for yourself. I'm keeping this all to myself. So, you know, I don't lose out on, you know, however many dollars I'd make otherwise. So I definitely see it that way. And maybe that's just because, you know, I did teaching for a little while. And so I might be a little biased from that side of things, but I definitely see the value in sharing the information, and I'm sure you guys have some opinions on it, but I think it really comes down to the way that it's shared and how you're going to, you know, share that information with another person in this industry. And there's definitely a right and a wrong way to do it, but there's some gray area there too. And I think that's where a lot of this stuff is, you know.
My thing is, if you put in the work, man, and you spent the hours, and you did the homework, and you did that, and you do whatever the hell you want with your information, it's yours to do whatever you please. I can't say, I may not agree with what you do with it, but it's not my business. It wasn't my time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're the person who took that information from somebody, and now you're handing it out, you place no value and no respect on that guy's work. And that's where I have a problem. And I've said it to many. And also, like, the whole topic, right, it has a lot of points, like a lot of valid points. At the end of the day, right, there's the sun shines for everybody, man. I mean, I've always said that there's room for everybody. But at the same token, it's like, you don't, at least for me, you don't really have a right to act a certain way, but then do something else. Like I can recall tons of conversations I've had with people in the industry, and I thank all the people who were always willing to help me. But I always drew that line of respect with, you know, sharing some other people's information. And to be honest with you, man, it's more of a instant gratification for the people sharing that information. Oh yeah, I'm the man now. I'm the man, and I think that's where most of the stuff comes from, man. It's just that whole, I don't care if I help you or not, I just feel good because I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it becomes, that's the biggest issue I feel now, especially like social media. I mean, look at kids nowadays. The instant, like, there's the instant gratification of likes and stuff like that. It's actually changing the way they think.
Yeah.
So imagine us as adults, it's pretty much going to be doing the same thing. So obviously, like, some people get a little rush from helping everybody and sharing this and sharing that. And I'm not singling anybody out. But at the same time, man, if the shoe fits, then wear it. I mean, I can have an honest conversation with just about anybody. You know, just it's really getting to a point right now where where do we stop? And again, it's not about the access of information. It's just like knowing when and where to share it. And the best, to me, right, the best example I have is Auto. You know, when they dropped the IM600 or the sister company or whatever, when the tool was dropped, I was part of that team that was able to get a tool with lifetime updates. I still paid for it. It's $4,500. But it was supposed to be the next thing, you know, the best next thing, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the tool was absolutely trash. It was junk. It was garbage. I had a bunch of other cheapy key readers and key programmers that I still had to use because the tool was trash. So, you know, it was our work. Everybody that first bought that thing and just send a log, and the time we took to send logs. And now look, that same tool cut our own throats. I got guys doing keys in my area for $40.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not going to do that. Now look at Euro keys. I mean, I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'll stick to Euro keys. You guys can keep the Hondas and the Chevys or whatever. Now it's almost the same thing, man. $100 for a BMW, $150 for Mercedes. Because it's easy now.
Yeah.
Because the tool hand, you know, there's no more homework to do. There's no more value to the work. And, you know, that affects more people. And again, man, the information's going to be there. Do what you want. But then again, like, that also kills off innovation.
Yeah.
So where do we find our healthy boundary for this?
Right.
That's the question.
That's the whole idea behind like a copyright or a patent or something like that, is to encourage innovation, because the person who put in the work and, you know, the creative person who came up with this, you know, can be, you know, rewarded or ensured that they're going to see, you know, profits or whatever from what they create. So it encourages people to innovate, where, yeah, what you're talking about, everybody's just going to copy your stuff. Okay, well, why am I going to put the work in, or why am I going to share any of it, right? I'm just going to keep this to myself because it's just going to get stolen. That is exactly what you say, is it's going to discourage the, you know, the Tommies and the Pedros of the world from sharing the really cool stuff that you're doing. And I mean, we need that. We need that in the industry. Obviously, like, these cars are not getting any easier. We need smart people coming up with really good ideas to fix them.
Yeah, it's, you said it best, you know, especially with your background in teaching, it's very conflicting, because you could have the good heart of nature to want to, you know, share stuff. But as Tommy mentioned, it can cut your own throat, right? And because it depends if that information is not handled correctly. And I love the way you had posed the idea for the podcast when you reached out to us. And I don't know if maybe you could help me with the wording, but it was pretty much how does this hold value, right? Or how did you word it?
Yeah. So the thought was, you know, what I do for a particular job, how much value does it really have if it's easily copied, right? If something I do, if I just show it to you and then you can do it with very little training, maybe you have to buy a tool and then, okay, you can do this. How valuable really was it? And I think there's an argument that it is, and it goes back to who figured it out in the first place.
Yeah.
But Are there things that we can seek out as technicians in the automotive field that I could show you how to do it, but it's going to be very difficult for you to replicate it, right? Like, you watch LeBron James play basketball. He's going to show you all he can do. Good luck copying it. Like, yeah. It's not going to happen. I mean, do we have skill sets like that, or should we be seeking out skill sets like that, I guess, is a question.
Yeah, and I was trying to think about that really hard, and it goes back to the comment about the tools in your toolbox, right, and how you use them.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there has to be less aggressive intent to hide things, as maybe as far as tooling, but techniques. I think the value is in the technique. And knowing, you know, it's the common thing that's cliche, right? Programming is easy till it's not. It's the same thing with doing anything at the board level or memory manipulation, because you could have a ABC module But anybody that's worked on ABC module can tell you, yeah, you can't just read it like this and like that. You have to do these few steps first.
Yeah.
So you could buy any tool you want, you know, spend anywhere from $500 to $7,000, $8,000 and say, oh, I have the tool to do it. But if you don't have the creativity and the understanding of the component, it's useless to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the hiding of the tools is, to answer one of your questions, it only has value because it's being hidden.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I told when we were in the tech talks, right? I told everybody, whoever made this tool, they're the ones coming up with the diagrams and the solder points and all of that. They're the ones that came up with the work. Their engineers or the backward engineered this, figured out where's the boop and where's this that's accessible to you as an end user. So those diagrams don't make you any more skilled than a preschooler that's separating a square from a circle. Now, yeah. Knowing the order, what to push those here. Buttons in, if the shoe fits, you said it, man. And, you know, so those things, there is no skill behind that. I applaud you for purchasing the tool. You know that you had the funds to do it. That's amazing, and that's good. You're 50% in. The other 50% is learning how to use it. And then maybe, just maybe, if you were left on your own to do all that research and figure out which buttons to push, how many modules that you ruined to get there, you might appreciate the information a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you spend a few all-nighters trying to get a module cloned over. It's like, okay, all right, I get, you know, it's a fraction of the work of the person who made that tool, right?
Yep.
Like, well, this is the other way I think about is fixing the BMW footwell modules, right? It's relatively easy, and now there's a lot of people out there that can do it. But I mean, even for me, like, okay, relatively easy. I don't know that I would have ever figured it out on my own, right? You just give me a footwell module, say, here, it's broke. And I had no knowledge about EEPROM stuff. I had no, you know, training. I hadn't gone to your class or anything like that. Take me 10 years and I'd probably never figure out how to fix that module to change the data and all that stuff. Like, there's no way. But somebody else put in tons and tons of work, or somebody really smart figured it out. And now, you know, I can hit a few buttons and fix a module.
And it's done.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you didn't, put in work like that, not saying that I could figure that out, but if you don't put in work like that, you have no respect for what's actually happening behind the scenes.
Exactly. That's the key.
And then it comes down to, again, money. Like, 'cause at the end of the day, like, none of us are here for shits and giggles, man. We're all trying to feed our families.
Yeah.
So then what's the point of us spending our free time and our time away from our families to try to learn to better ourselves for what? So just somebody else can take it and ride with it. And that's, again, but then there's also the line of being a gatekeeper, not wanting to show information, not wanting to share this, not wanting to share that. My thing about gatekeeping is not so much sharing, because I'll stop anything to help anybody. Like, I don't have that issue. But my issue is now, like, how are you gonna vet people, man? And again, you know, to get on topic, you know, the whole module swap section of Diag.net, right? I mean, for whatever intents and purposes, man, I don't know what the end goal is here, right? Because it's still a company. It still has shareholders. It still has, you know, it's still going to make money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say somebody's not going to take our hard work, our hard-earned information, and either, like, and the end user will go and take our hard-earned money, our hard-earned time and information, and then just go devalue something we did, or to the other end point, the company. What's in it for them not to take all this information, and then once they have a massive library, sell it?
Yep.
Some feelings are going to get hurt, man, but it's just the truth. Like, I don't see, for me personally, I don't know what Pedro feels, but for me personally, I don't have a feel or sense of duty or obligation to contribute to anything like that. I may be wrong, but I don't know.
No, you're not wrong. To be completely transparent and honest, I'm actually torn between it. you know, I was trying to find a side to step on the fence, and I still don't know, because when I first saw it, I think I felt that a lot of hard work would be devalued. And then my good friend Mike Christofferson had made a put his thoughts on there, right? That he felt that it really wouldn't devalue anything, that it would just encourage more people to search for training, or maybe find people that offer mailing services to boost up work, because now they know, oh, wait, that module can't be done with OEM. I should seek out someone that has this tooling that I have no intention of buying. But then you have someone that's, you know, been in this industry a long time and is just a master of the craft, this Kevin Sutor. He put some comments on there that really, really solidified why it's probably not a safe idea. So I'm kind of stuck in the middle from two great opinions of people that do this every day, that they both make valid points. I really think so. And to me, it's more like, I guess we have to wait and see. It is a company and it is the internet. So the moment your information is there, you just gave it up. But we also put so much stuff on Facebook and Messenger groups, and, you know, even the think back, guys, when we had the now we have like a waveform library on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can think back when I was getting into, you know, heavy into Diag, owning a no good waveform was like gold, and people wouldn't want to share it with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like now we went over that hump, and it's like, oh yeah, I'll upload it here. Who cares? And now you do have guys, like I think there was a case of a guy in Europe or another country that tried to get all those files together and sell them or something.
Really?
So it's that's why I don't know. It's too early to tell. You know, money is the, you know, drives all evil. So who knows what's going to happen with that information. But to me personally, it's really early to tell. I agree with Tommy, though. I don't think I would personally ever contribute to that part of that forum. But I don't know how bad it really is yet.
But here's the thing, right? Like, I've pondered this a lot, and I've said it to a couple people and a couple friends in their industry, because, again, to not to super counter your point, Pedro, but the Facebook and the messengers, right? Like, I know who I'm talking to. Diag.net is basically open to the public now. I don't know if that's going to change, but for right now, pretty much anybody can be a member. I mean, either which way. I don't know how that structure. I know it changed a few years after it launched. I didn't check. Don't quote me on it. But I know that there's no vetting, because I've seen some questions that make me ponder, why are you working on this vehicle?
Right.
But again, that's neither here nor there. But I go back to like when I started, right? Like, nobody helped me for shit. There was no Facebook, man. I taught myself how to program. Like, literally just by just finding articles and just reading and then downloading. So, like, I just literally step by step by step. It took me 2 days basically to program my first car, on and off, because I was busy with other stuff. But, you know, I don't have any regrets for it, because I feel like it gave me the strength to be like, yeah, I'm not worried about anything no more. It's all just, you know, just taking the time and figuring it out. But then, like, again, this is an industry-wide people. How many times have even – I fall victim to it sometimes too, where it's just like, I'm so busy, I'm this and that. I just decided, you know, I'm going to call Patreon. Hey, man, you've seen this, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I think it's this. All right, cool. But then you step back and I'm like, man, dude, like, I remember a time where I used to just have to fight and fight to learn. But I feel like that made me better.
Yep.
Like, I feel like the struggle is actually the best part of it. Like they say, you know, it's the biblical saying, you know, feed a man, he eats for a day. Teach him how to fish, he eats for a lifetime.
Yep.
And I feel like sometimes we need to go back just a little bit to like, hey man, like, let's do some homework, let's do some research, you know, make sure that our information is staying to at least a group of peers. Because I know, for example, like if Pedro ever calls me like, hey man, you've seen this, I'll drop what I'm doing, helping them. Sean, like, basically people who are in our groups, like, I don't have any issues, you know, helping them out, and hopefully they helps their family. But I feel like it gets too much, man. And I know I'm going to get some slack for this, man. And it is what it is. I mean disrespectfully, but man, sometimes I'll get some questions and I'm just like, dude, like, where do you come off asking me this, man? Like for real, like, and it's just not to anybody's fault, right? But like, dude, like, like, why would I, why would you, why do you think I would answer this question to you? And it's more like it's a demand, like it's a sense of entitlement I feel, you know. And again, like I may be misconstruing things, but I strongly feel that sometimes we've gotten to the point where it's almost like I have to help you. I don't have to do a damn thing.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more on the point about the struggle of figuring something else. That's the thing that's going to improve you the most. I mean, it's so good for you to get your butt kicked on something and get out the other side. You're going to be so much better for it than somebody handed you the answer. And I try to remember that. And it's a constant, you know, balancing act of I'm trying to be efficient and make money for my business, but I also want to improve my skills. And so given the time and the patience, which depends on the day, I'll try to work my way through something without asking people questions. And then I finally do once I completely screw something up and I'm like, help Tommy. But I want to try to get through as much of it as I can all on my own. Even if I know somebody probably knows the answer, because shortcutting to the end, it's going to be less valuable in the long run. But yeah, I don't know. It doesn't always work out that way.
That's very true though. When you struggle and you know that you don't have another way out, your mind works differently. You know, you're in survival mode. Now, I had an interesting thought as you were talking about that, Tommy. Let me know what you guys think. I've always had a passion for electronics and drivability. Even when I just got into the field, I always make this joke, but I mean, I couldn't be more serious, that I started off working in Spanish-speaking shops in the neighborhood I was in, and just because I spoke English, they would give me the scan tool and say, here, you know how to read, you take care of this car. So I had to be the one to do it, not because I was good at it, just because they felt that, hey, well, he can read the buttons, give him a try. So that led to a lot of mistakes, a ton of mistakes, which equal learning lessons, right? So the point I'm alluding to is my world was small because I wasn't on social media till probably 2017, 2016. I always avoided it, and I had nothing. Everything I did was on my own. And that passion that I've had for electronics and drivability, that's the type of work that was always around me. And shops would bring me cars, you know, to work on things. And I personally felt that I could always succeed given enough time. And I think that allowed me the cars I had in front of me to accomplish something. Now, I wasn't taking on major programming jobs, module cloning, module repair, really elaborate in-cylinder things. I wasn't tooled up for them. But my mind, my world was small. So because I hadn't expanded into that area, I didn't know what I was missing out on. So now you bring social media into it. It's very tough to see everybody doing so many different things and you not having that interest and that attraction to want more. And the amount of time it takes for you to do it without any resources, it's almost impossible. So that's where it comes, that ease of just asking, because now you're exposed to it. Something you might have never known about, you see somebody doing it and you get an answer in 5 seconds. So now that callus you build from just getting your butt kicked goes away, and you turn into, we're all identifixes. We're all walking identifixes. And, you know, I've always used to tell people when I was getting into the industry, it's a dangerous weapon. I got into a habit just for a couple months when I was early on using it. When it was gone, I was like, wait, where do I start now? Mm-hmm. You know, and it cripples you. So these questions are crippling people. You could have someone message you, hey, can I do a used module on this 2011 Ford? It's like, dude, well, why don't you try it? I promise the car won't catch on fire. Just try it. You know, and if you don't know the answer, we'll try it. You know, now if it's something more elaborate, fine. But you get these really, and this is not to discourage people from asking questions. Please don't take it that way. It's to encourage you to try things, right? I always talk about that in class. Try something new. Get out of your comfort zone and go push some buttons. Because I guarantee you, the guy that has the answers, he probably did the same thing.
Go ahead, John. I used to have a boss at one of the first shops that I worked at, and he was a dickhead, and he was one of those guys who he didn't want to really help you out with anything, but he knew what he was doing. And I hated asking him questions for that reason, because I knew I was just, you know, he's going to have some asshole comment or just be a dickhead about it. And so But sometimes you have to, especially when you're new, because you just don't know. But before I would ask him, I'd run it through my head. I'm like, all right, what is he probably going to tell me to do first? Or what should I have at least done first before I go to this guy to ask this question yes. to make it at least more likely that I'll get something useful out of him? And then so then I go back. I'm like, okay, well, I better go check this before I go back, right? And I think that's a good thing for everybody is not treat, you know, you guys like you're assholes. You're definitely not. But okay, what's Tommy going to tell me to do first? Or what's he going to ask me for first? I got to go double check that before I bring this to somebody else. Do my due diligence before I'm you know, taking someone else's time out of their day.
But the only reason you were there, because he probably talked down to you so many times, right?
Yes.
And you're like, I don't want to. And I felt the same way.
Yep.
I'm like, I cannot even imagine. I would literally sit there just like you and be like, okay, what smart ass response could they give me if I asked for help?
Yep.
And then I would think, wait, I didn't check that. I didn't want to check it. I didn't want to take apart this air box to get to that connector, but they're going to ask me. I should go check it first. Yep. And guess what? You'd probably find your answer after you did that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, my experience coming out from UTI was worse than both of you guys. I was legit on my own, man. Like, legit. Like, I remember even being in UTI, man, I ended up, you know, financing a scan tool because I didn't have one. And I knew that this is what I wanted to do. So, man, it was horrible. Like, I remember trying to, like, I remember struggling so hard to pay that mofo off, man. And I had it paid off by the time I finished school. I took some of the money that they gave you for tools. I bought some better hand tools, some of the bigger stuff. And then when I finally got to where I decided that I was just going to stay at my dad's shop for a little bit longer. And I remember like trying to borrow this guy's pressure gauge across the street, and I'm just like, hey man, can you borrow? Oh man, it's just too much money, blah blah blah. I'm like, man, I gotta fix this damn car, and like, what am I gonna do now? And I think that's the reason why I am who I am, because I know how it feels, man, to be fucking lost, and nobody gives a flying fuck about you.
Yeah.
Dude, I had a struggle. Like, I remember like running around in rinky-dink cars because I was buying tools, paying that high-ass interest because I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have credit. So I just, you know, would throw everything that I made, man, was going to buy tools. And I knew it was going to pay off one day because I was investing in myself, man. Not a car, not like parts for a car or project cars or bikes or none of that. I was buying tools, man. I've been buying tools since I was in school. And, man, I don't have any regrets, man, because I think that grind is what got me here. But it also, like, I think about that very often when I'm answering questions, and I'm just like, man, dude, like, I would have killed to have somebody like me back then. But then it's just some days when I'm mad, I'm like, man, nah, man, I'm glad I didn't have nobody, I didn't have anybody like me back then.
Well, again, it's like there's a balancing act even for that, right? Like, give you all the materials to make a cell phone. That is required to make a cell phone. It's just you on an island, and they give me 200 years, and I'll never make that cell phone, right? It'll never happen. So, but what can I do with this thing in relation to my job? It's you know, a complete game changer compared to if you didn't have one. And so there's certain things where people can reach an entirely new level using what has already been done. Like, you can accomplish something so cool because of, you know, generations before us or other people in the field's work. And again, this is where I see both sides of it, because obviously you can take advantage of people's, you know, hard work and stuff like that. But if everybody always kept everything to themselves, where would we be? Not even close to where it, you know, the level of ingenuity is right now. But then you have China and Autel just stealing everybody's stuff. You know, that's the flip side of it. And it devalues everything. So I don't know.
Yeah. And it really makes you wonder, though, is it individuals that are giving too much weight? You know, there is. There's always going to be some bad apples. But in the bigger scheme, if you didn't have like auto with an IM608 or something like that, right? Would it still be that easy for us in general terms to say, oh yeah, you know, people are giving everything away and devaluing everything? I don't think so. You know, you got to look at industries, how industries change and technology changes and availability of things, availability of information and tooling. When you have a tool that's affordable, that NAPA and freaking CarQuest, well, they're gone now, Advanced Auto Parts sells, it's right there in front of you. Is it really your fault? Are you really the bad guy that's devaluing the industry? Or is it just a changing industry, we're changing technology, and we're constantly having to keep pacing ahead?
Do you guys think that other industries face these same types of issues? Like, I'm trying to think of a good parallel here. I'm thinking airline industry, but it's probably just too many regulations to be in the same boat that we're in.
Mom and Pop and Jimbo aren't going to be working on a 747.
We have computer repairs, right? Look at a couple of guys that focus on Mac repairs online, and I'm terrible with names, but there's a guy, Lewis something, I think, that does a lot of cool stuff on YouTube, and you know, they're always pushing for right to repair acts and stuff like that, and I think that's something similar, right? He might know a tool that can test a chip. He might have a tool that can determine how to move some data over, things like that. And then now his competitor has it. But the only reason he has it is because Amazon showed a listing for it now. You know, so it's – I think that a lot of industries do go through the same thing we're going. Obviously, we're all in a small world. That's the thing. The world we're in, our little automotive world, it's very small. Mm-hmm. So anything that happens feels so impactful. But I think every industry is going through some huge, huge changes the same way.
I feel like the difference between us and them is they are particular to what they're doing, right? Like, they're working on electronics and phones, but you're still working on electronics, right? We're still heavy line work. We're still this. We're still that. Like, I feel that our industry is still a trade, per se, in terms of – like, technologically speaking, like, and this is going to sound really stupid, right? But bear with me. When you think of a plumber, an iron worker, a fucking union painter, right? High tech isn't the first thing that comes into your mind, right?
Right.
It's our profession is even worse, in my opinion, like, in terms of how we're viewed. So the fact that we're even having this conversation probably just flabbergasting most of the American consumers. Like, why are these rednecks worried about, you know, what tool can read a Renesas or a Tricor? Like, why do they even know what that is? So I feel like that's unique to our industry. Like, I feel like times didn't catch up to us. Like we still stayed in a mentality where we're the 60s, 70s, and 80s, which was to me the golden age of being a technician, because how many aside, inflation aside, right? How many mechanics back in the day went straight from school and making damn near six figures back in the 70s and 80s? There was a lot of them. They just basically worked out of your house and you were making a couple grand a week. How many? I know a guy that I met when I was at the dealer, and he was working at a GM dealership at the time. That guy was like, dude, I used to do like two, you know, turbo 350 transmissions a day. He was like, man, I had three brand new cars. He's like, I had my play car. I had a two car garage. I had a beautiful home. My kids went through college. You can't do that now. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, aside from, like I said, inflation, but like the gap of wages into what we actually have to know versus what we get paid, it's just too hard now, man.
Is that where, I mean, some of this comes back to is the end user, right, or the customer, the consumer, the driver, the car, and the value they see in the repair, and then our work on the back end is a reflection of that we're fighting people for $40 keys because it's not valued by the person driving the car as much.
Yeah. And it goes back to like a equally changing industry, right? It's just growing. It changes, and the end users can cause that. Companies that contribute equipment can cause that. So it's that magic question that the million-dollar question.
Yeah. What would it look like if everything was, perfect, or everything was ideal? I mean, how would the, I know it's a big question, but how would the automotive industry look if things were more ideal?
Well, for me, I think it would be, I'm not sure if I'm going to use the right words, but like a certification process that's not voluntary, but you have to go through these specific tests, specific training, and you have to renew every year. Because now, if you go through those motions and you have to meet all this criteria, it's a lot harder to have someone feel that they can devaluate or make it easy for them. Not some guy that was able to go buy a tool at his local parts store and feel, you know what, as a side hustle, I'm going to go make keys for $50. You know, I'm going to go program GMs, you know, or another one I hear, oh yeah, my buddy works at GM. He'll come at night, program it for $40.
Yeah.
But I bet you that same guy at GM is complaining about how much he gets paid at the dealer to do a diag 3/10 of an hour. But then you, as soon as you punch out, you're adding that onto the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes against some of my views of big government. But at the end of the day, having to have these requirements, I think it keeps a lot of people out. If you started doing that now, I think it would drain the swamp really fast.
Now, they have a system somewhat like that in Canada. I don't think it's every year, but they do have requirements, you know, that every shop has to have. I think it's at least one, you know, they call it Red Seal certified technician. And I've talked to some of the guys up there, and they say this, you know, that it doesn't stop people from, you know, working out of their garages or having not certified people working in the shop under the certified person. So, you know, obviously everybody's going to find a loophole around something. I agree. I think we were going back to, you know, kind of like the talking about vetting people for stuff and having some sort of rigorous certification is a good thing. As a barrier to entry, right? Having to show that I'm dedicated enough to figure this stuff out and pass this test because I want to do this stuff as a professional, right?
Yeah, that the whole certification thing, man, it's a step in the right direction, but it's not all to it, man. It's just it's so sad to see how hard our industry's image and appeal just going down the shitter, man. And it's I've said this, you know, numerous times on our conversations, man. It needs to burn before it gets any better. And I think it's there where it's about to start, man. Because, you know, and then the sad part is, man, like I see this with a lot of the older crowd and the older people who are just kind of like, you know, I'm just milking this until I retire. And that's another thing that we have to go against. Like look at Pedro, man. I'm like, I mean, I don't count myself this because I, for the most part, been self-employed. So I've always made my own moves. But why did he have to struggle to go to a training event when you can just join the plumbers union or the electrical union? They pay for your school. You know, we have literally no appeal to join this industry anymore, and that's sad. But I'm not gonna lie. Like aside from what we do or what we can find interesting, like the electronics and the programming, and you know the higher end stuff that I think is really cool, and that I think that can be used as an enticement for the younger generation that grew up with a phone in their face, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we have to offer entry level in this position? Slinging oil changes for a couple dollars over minimum wage here in Chicago? I mean, it's pretty grisly, man.
There is I mean, there's a lot of passionate people, and I'm not very involved with a lot of these business groups and things like that, but there is a push to change that, right? You know, for better pay and things like that, because, yeah, you're right. When I started, I mean, a shop was maybe offering you anywhere from $9 to $12 an hour to start working on cars, you know, and it was back in like 2006. And it's tough, you know, if you have a family and you have to buy your own tools. So there's a lot of people that have been working to change that. It's definitely, the word hasn't gotten out, you know, like it should, but the amount of things we have to do on cars nowadays, it doesn't compare. It's like when you have to tell the school counselor, that's advising, you know, Johnny with bad grades and a third grade reading level, he should go to auto shop. And I wish he was the one calibrating her ADAS system on her. You know, because then it would really come to life. Wait a second. Maybe is some skill set behind what we're doing.
Damn, bro. Well, your teacher really put you in the corner, huh?
No, but you see my example? Yeah. It's all perception, and it's nobody's fault. It's just the world and how things are done. But as each individual, each shop, you can hold yourself at a higher status, not do work for free, because nobody should have to work for free. Just because you can afford to do something for free doesn't mean you should. So those are the things that as a whole need to change. And there is movements towards it, though. I see so many people fighting every day to improve the industry. But sometimes it's a little too late to have a big impact.
Yeah, I have faith, man. I love it, man. But then there's times like this where it's just like, dude, man, we can't even catch a break from anybody. And then when I see stuff like this, and like, again, I'm not singling out just any particular, you know, any particular group or association, but that one sticks out the most for me, because it's like, what is your end game? And I just feel like us, and I may be wrong, man, and I might get a call from the higher ups, but at the end of the day, like, it's just the truth. Like, what is the end game here for us? How do we benefit as a whole by having certain information out there? Because let's just be blunt here, man. Programming information, dude, it's there. Like, you can, if I found it without Facebook, you can find it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the information's out there. There's tons of resources now. Get a subscription to L1, you'll learn how to program. It's the little nuances, the stuff that we've worked hard to get around, and the stuff that other people have tried to do so they can be just one little step ahead. Somebody that can be better at something, so they can, you know, afford to send their kid off to college, so they don't have to be working on these crap ass cars. Yeah, somebody that put in that work, and is it all gone now? I don't know. It's too early to tell, but nobody thought about that. And, you know, again, you can, you know, the beautiful part about it is that you don't have to participate for shit. Like, it's no skin off my teeth. But then again, like, where are the innovations going to come from? Where's the next step? And EV cars are knocking on our door, homie.
Yep.
Like, they're here. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's no R2R for those fuckers. Like, you know, all the companies are going to give us the big middle finger when it comes to working on them. Eventually it'll fix. But for the most part, look at Tesla. How long was Tesla in business before they started giving us access to Toolbox?
Right.
Was it like 10 years? At least? Something like that?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, to be honest.
It was a lot, man. I mean, shit. They had the first little, whatever it was called, the Roadster. Then the Model. Yeah, they had basically all four cars launched. And they still hadn't given us access to the aftermarket. And they don't have to, because they don't produce emissions.
You still can't buy parts, if I'm correct, without being like brick and mortar or like.
But you can buy Toolbox now, at least.
Okay.
You can actually have access to their information now, so it's a little bit easier now, because I think they realize that hey, man, like, there's a lot more of these cars out there than they can actually repair.
Have you guys worked on any?
No, I have not.
No, not at all. I've never even sat in one.
Okay. I went for a ride once, and that was it. So. Well, one of my former students is a tech there, and he showed me some stuff that was pretty cool. But yeah, that was about it. So
yeah, it still leaves the question open, though, Sean. Where is the value, right? and that's going to be the key. And I think time will tell. It's almost like a daring experiment. If you really put, with no intention of burning anything down, it's just if, as a whole, and we could say the family of automotive technicians was working on lifting each other up instead of holding others down, with moderation, I think there would be huge, huge changes. And I think a lot of it comes from anything that's worth any real money and that's going to benefit you long term money wise, it's not something that can be easily duplicated. I think that's where it all lies, you know, as we were posing these questions, that if it's something that can be easily copied, you're in for a short ride.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that actually takes skill and technique and just a really good engagement and practice, it's one of those things where, here you go. I mean, how many times do you walk into a shop, Sean, to do a diagnostic, and you might have, and I don't know what your tool of choice is, your Auto, your Snap-on, whatever. Mine is Snap-on for diagnostics. I like their graphing data recording, all that fun stuff.
My test light.
Your test light. There you go. And the guy said, no, you make a great point. The guy says, well, you can only diagnose this car because you have that tool. It's like, buddy, you have one in your toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Can he be Sean? No, he can't.
Right.
You could hand him over your test light. Say, here you go. All right, well, like I always do, I hand them my scan to them. Like, here you go. Now you can use it. I'll watch you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it comes down to.
Yep.
And I think that's where the value is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when you can, you know, put a premium to your price. Because, again, like, they can watch you do it. And maybe they get that exact same car again. But maybe it's a mouse that chewed a wire, and that'll never happen again, ever, on that particular vehicle. Right?
In that exact same spot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's an interesting, I hadn't really thought about it that way, that, you know, the diagnostics, unfortunately, still has been devalued. You know, that's the sort of thing where it's at, where, like, you build your skills over years, decades to get where you're at. And people put on brilliant case studies like you guys at Vision, but that doesn't mean that everybody who watched it can go do that exact same thing now. Maybe a little closer, maybe they're inspired. But doesn't mean that they can just go walk into a shop and accomplish that same thing. That's really interesting to think about those two things.
Yeah, man, Diag is the ultimate leveler of the field, man. Because now we get to see what kind of big boy pants you got. Can you figure this out? Mm-hmm. Can you chase this network issue? Can you see why this thing is only misfiring between 2 to 3,000 RPMs? Can you do this? Can you do that? And that's why I'm not, like, super concerned, because I, you know, again, I'm nowhere near, like, Pedro's level or some of these guys, man, but I can hold my own. And I've made my mark starting with Diag. I mean, obviously, like, the used module stuff and being able to program you shit, and because I've been doing this crap for such a long time, but it always falls back to the same, man, that for us to keep going and keep evolving, man, it's going to be Diag. And even when EV cars come, you know, things are going to be different, there's going to be algorithms, but at the end of the day, it's like, who's going to mess with them first? And it's going to be us, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be the irreplaceable part. People that you're going to be the one that's sought after. If you're concerned about how you can stay engaged in the industry, it just keep evolving. And no matter what industry you're in, if you keep evolving, you're going to be fine. If you're going to stand there and stomp your feet, upset at what other people do, you're going to stand still. When just always remember that if nobody's really competition, if they're not doing the same thing you are. And that goes from customer skills, the quality of your work, your devotion. And if they're not you, they're not competition. So this withholding of information, I get it to a degree, especially with people that do such cool innovations and techniques. I'll never, ever even consider compromising that. But in the general scheme of things, like we were picking on in the class, it's, you know, a tool that can do something. Like, go ahead, buddy, go buy it. Learning how to use it the same way I learned.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where we can draw the line and safely encourage so much talent. You could do a class on it. You might share a tool with somebody and encourage amazing talent that just, it was untapped until you were there that changed that person that day, and because you share some information. And you did it without hurting anybody. And that's what I mean by uplifting each other instead of holding each other down. There's not enough technicians in this field. I think we can all agree on that. We can argue the numbers.
Yep.
So holding each other down is the silliest thing we can do.
Right.
You know, we're the minority right now, right? Like, we have to uplift each other. We can't put each other down. Just lift everybody up together, because united, I mean, we'd be unstoppable. But there's such a divide in so many places. It's really sad.
It's the unfortunate byproduct of the flat rate life mentality, man. Why would I stop helping you if I still got to feed my family? Because I don't even know I'm going to get 40 hours this week. It stayed with us.
Yeah.
Not so much me, because again, like I said, I've only worked flat rate maybe 6 months in my entire career. You know, even that when I was at the dealer, half of it was I was just slinging oil changes, and then, you know, doing side work and just doing this and doing that, odds and ends, PMIs and stuff like that for the dealer. But the actual flat rate stuff, yeah, that's literally where that comes from. And even like from the higher ups, even from like the companies, man, like they had no problem screwing you over, man. And hey, man, flat rate is flat rate. So it's kind of like it's embedded into us as part of our culture, man.
Yep.
That's that part.
Yeah. Actually, intentionally making it a competition. That's what I experienced when I was in a store at Firestone, where they'd post the turning and burning, you know, hours for the area and for the store up on the wall every week. Right. It's just like, there's a goal behind that, is to get you to almost work against each other. Who can get the most hours?
Yes.
You know? It's the cheese in the wheel, baby. Yeah. You're the hamster.
When I worked at a similar store like that, a Carrox, it was the same idea. And the problem was, you would have, let's say I was the new guy, any DIAC troubleshooting, they would give it to you, and you thought they were really uplifting you to grow and you know, get better at your craft, but they were over there, you know, hanging calipers and struts on any retired person that walked in. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. Like, you know, that was literally the way of life, and it's scary, and it's all driven by money, right? They'd have those charts. How much money can you do this month? Look at your performance. How many breaks did you sell? Instead of encouraging quality work.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say, I'm not digging in any of these stores a specific name. You just reminded me of the environment of being so competitive. And that's the one that came to mind. And as an industry, that's one of the things that has to change. It's very, very frightening, the way that people are driven.
My first flat rate job was a heater core on a damn brand new Nissan Pathfinder, man. That shit sucked. It took me 4 days to finish that hunk of junk, man. I booked like 7 hours for the week. You think they cared? They fucking laughed at me.
Yep.
Yep.
I had a flex plate. One of my first jobs was a flex plate on a Ford Explorer. And yeah, just, it was...
Boy.
It was like 2-3 days. Yeah, I'd never pulled a transmission before. And it's like, what's this transfer case thing? Oh, I got to get this out of the way. Yeah, it's...
And that's without it being rusted, right? And nothing breaking.
Yeah, no, there's no rust at all.
Oh, boy.
I'm glad you guys can share that with me. I talk to a lot of people from down south, and they have no clue about the torch and the rust. And the.
Oh, boy.
That's actually one of the only reasons why I made money doing flat rate, man. Because nobody wanted to work on the snowbird cars when I was in Orlando. So I had to do all the Honda. It was a Hyundai Nissan dealer, so I had to do the... At the time, they were recalling converters on, like, the Sonata, the Elantra, and the Tiburon. So, they stuck me with all of them because they were all rusty, and then the bolts were snapping, and then the technicians were crying. I'm just like, man.
Just another day, right?
Man, that shit over, man. I was telling Pedro that my first side job there was an axle on a 91 Accord with the wishbone setup, where you know, separate the axle from the lower control, separate the strut from the lower control arm, and you know that that bushing always seizes so bad. So I remember I ran to Home Depot to get some MAP gas and some WD-40 and and then some prayers, and then I get to the car and
spin it off with
the I'm like, what type of sorcery is this? what the hell is going on? And yeah, I was done in 20 minutes. I was like, my God.
Yeah.
I could get used to this. To that. I remember spending like an hour. Anybody ever spend an hour trying to get a stupid link off?
That's the story of our lives up here.
Yep.
In the salt belt.
So yeah, it's definitely interesting how you – I don't know how you guys do brake lines. I've never done a brake line in my life. I'm like,
oh,
man.
Oh, God. Yeah, if I never do another brake line ever, I am fine with that. Yeah, Chevy trucks. Memorized the Chevy truck brake lines.
I remember when I first did I did one, and they were talking about the Dorman set. Oh, the Dorman set is so much better. I was like, nah, man, I'll never do this again. That was such a waste of time. Nycop and adios. And you see, like, the luster of our industry, having to fight with salt and fight with the owner, but fight with the service rider. Why do you need an extra hour? I'm like, because I got to fight with these stupid bolts. Why do you need bolts? Why'd you break them?
Yeah, I was out there every night throwing salt on Mrs. Jones' car for 10 years until I got here.
I told her not to wash this thing. Pedro always gets on me because I never like washing my car when it's like in the winter. He's just get the salt off of it. I'm like, I'm not spending $16 to get no damn salt off my car.
Get a fresh coat.
Oh, man. But yeah, this is the beautiful part about our industry, man. It's just these conversations and finding like our group of like-minded individuals, man. I just wish there was more of it, man. I wish there was more unity. I wish we had more of a bond, man. It's just, man, we go to these training events and it's the same ugly faces, no offense. and in all of them, it doesn't matter. You go to Vision, you see the same people. You go to ASTE, it's the same. I've never been to ATE or STX. So, but I gather, right? It's more of the same people that you either see online or you see contributing, you see people. And again, it's not a bad thing, right? But they used to say that before, like here in Chicago, we used to have a CAN conference, and that's actually where I met Pedro. And the very last one, and the surprising thing was is that, you know, aside from the other people that I met from Chicago, most people that were at CAN weren't even from Chicago.
Yeah, they were from out of state.
They were from out of state. So it's kind of like, well, there's, you know, 3 million people in Chicago, like 12 in Chicagoland, something like that. And you mean to tell me that, you know, nobody wanted to go to the CAN conference? So it's kind of like, it's pretty sad, man.
That was a... That one event there, I can say, was a staple of forming one of my close automotive circles that I'm in now. That was probably one of the coolest gatherings with a lot of sharp minds. Like you said, they were not in Chicago. The people flew in. I mean, I remember, you know, Bryn, Justin was there. Yeah, there was just so many guys from different areas, and it was cool. It was cool, man.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite events. That whole year for training, man, was spectacular. Vision, Auto Mechanica, and then CAN, dude. It was surreal.
I think it was just a lot of people were excited to. It was like a turning moment for like a lot of socializing as part of your day job with the automotive, like just joining all these groups and sharing information and trying to get better. You know, there's always like these waves of something, right? So we were all there because we were really eager to participate in all these diagnosing mechanical problems with electrical tools, right? That's one of the biggest hits at that time. And then we were all there for it. We were all excited about it. And as you go through these waves together, we're all evolving together. We're growing together. And it really just keeps the bond there.
Man, it was such a game changer for me, man. Like, we met Chris Martino there.
Yeah, you're right.
We met Chris Martino there. I picked him up from the airport. I was everybody's personal bitch for that whole weekend. But Auto Mechanical was great, man. Yeah, dude. I
stuck with her, I think.
Yeah, Steckler. Yeah, I met Steckler at Auto Mechanica because he covered for Jim Morton. He wasn't able to see his class.
He looked a lot taller when he was up there.
Yeah, no shit, right? You know, Super Saturday, dude. Like, it was such a great year for training, man. And I'm hoping that we rekindle that, man, because these past few years have been honestly, man, ego filled. And even on my end, man, like, I'm not afraid to admit, man, that I've had my moments where I'm just like, man, fuck this guy, I ain't helping you for shit. And then I'm just like, is that really what you are, or really what you want to do? But it's just, again, man, it's that balancing act. I'm human, bro. I'm still a man at the end of the day. And it's just like, man, like I remember being there. I remember being like, oh, man, you ain't worth shit. You're not going to be anything. Oh, we don't. I had one shop tell me, why do you need service information if you can't fix a car without reading a book? You're not a mechanic. Even though, wow. Like, 6 years later, I was fixing cars for him. But that's beside the point. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, I fought all that adversity, man, and I'm in a position to help people. It's almost like an obligation, you know, and I feel like that sometimes. But then again, where do I draw the line? My own healthy boundaries for me, that I'm like, dude, I can't help you right now, home slice. I'm sorry, I'm getting my ass kicked.
Yeah,
that's where I think most of us struggle for real.
Yeah, we're all super busy and. Everyone has to at least have it in the back of your mind to be respectful of other people's time. And I know I do. I feel like I inconvenience anyone.
Me too.
To directly send you a message about something. Like, I'm usually really in a bind if I do that to anybody. Or maybe I know, like, you know, something really specific about this. I don't know, but I'd rather just put it out to a group and then, hey, whoever's waiting for, a 10-minute Pats relearn can throw something out there, you know, like, I don't know who's bored at the moment. And so I'll put it out in the group and then I feel a little bit better about that. You know?
Yeah, I feel the same way, except for Pedro. Man, that ship sailed already.
Speed dial.
Yep.
No, that's, it's good when you have a close circle to do that with, because you know that, that will reciprocate one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Oh, 100%, man. I'm a firm believer in putting coins in the karma bank. I just again, I've struggled as of late with my own thoughts and my own morals and my own decisions, man, based on, you know, recently transpiring events. And I'm just like, I think I missed that. I missed that whole, oh man, the industry looks bright. You know, and 2017 was that for me, man. It looked really, really bright for me, though. The industry looks so big. But then as you get deeper involved in it, man, you realize how shitty it is in the background. And it's pretty sad, man. But I hope that we can keep and be the change that this industry needs, so that I can one day say, yeah, man, be a technician, bro. It's going to be great. You know, you're going to be able to provide, you're going to be able to do all this and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think as the next generation of shop owners comes in, they'll probably start leading the way.
Yeah. I mean, we have this disagreement often. It's a big pet peeve of mine when I hear somebody say this. And do you ever run into people, Sean, that'll say, I would never let my kid work in this industry. Or, yeah, I told this kid to not join this industry.
Oh, for sure.
And I really disagree with that. I don't like that mentality. That sounds terrible. And Tommy has fought me on this one, you know, a lot. And I think with the right guidance, it's not the right answer to persuade people not to join. I don't know if you feel the same, but I think discouraging people's almost working against our goals.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably one of those things where you have to ask yourself honestly, okay, if I had a son or daughter, would I want them to go into this? And I think that's probably where you get the most honest answer for yourself. you know, take away the bias one way or another, negative or positive, right? Like, I was a teacher. Of course, I'm going to encourage people to come into this industry. You know, Tommy's kind of pissed off with how the industry is running. Maybe he's not, but like, what would you tell your kid, real honest? And then you can kind of go from there. But I love the industry. And of course, yeah, I want to encourage people to get into it. But if I'm going to do that, then the responsibility is back on me to do everything I can to make it better. That's a lot, but I'm going to try and do what I can and at least not bring it the other way, at least not drag it down.
Yeah. The problem I have is, again, and I don't think I persuade anybody, but I'm not going to sit here and fucking lie. I'm not going to sit here and bullshit and be like, yeah, you know, it's the best thing. No, man, not especially when there's so many other trades making 3 times as much money starting out with literally zero investment other than your training that will probably get paid for by the company who hired you. Especially if you have no interest in electronics, man, because electronics is really the niche thing here in our industry. But would you guys have any of your kids, you'd be okay with your kids starting off working at Jiffy Lube, changing oil?
No, and that's where I always have to be honest and say no, that I would encourage them to go through some kind of electronics training and then step into the field.
Because, mm-hmm. Say for example, right? It's like I know a guy whose kid just finished the a welding program at a local community college. That guy's kid got hired through the local welding union. For I forgot which part of it, because there's different parts of the union for them, and that guy's making $38 an hour fresh out of school.
Damn.
No tooling. He went to community college, so his, I don't know if they're gonna reimburse him for that. Unlimited overtime. He's gonna start off getting a pension, blah blah blah. And that's not all. That's just starting off. When he finishes his apprenticeship, now it's $50 an hour.
Wow.
So you're gonna look at this and changing oil for minimum wage. Sorry, dude. I can't. I'm not gonna sit here and lie. Now, if you want to pursue it, and I know you, I'll do whatever I can to help you get into a better position where you're not stuck, fucking, you know, at certain places. And again, not name dropping, but it's the truth. Like when you look at how you come into the industry, we all did it. I changed oils at a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dealership, but I was still doing oil changes. That was my first, you know, corporate experience in terms of our industry. But again, like look at the facts. I had – how much was UTI? Was $22,000 when I signed up. I had at the time about – remember, I had my own scan tool. I had my own tools, my toolbox and everything. So I had about maybe $20,000 in tools at the time that I left my dad and I moved to Florida. $40,000 in an investment to go make $850 when I had guys working at Disney making $8 an hour. 40 hours a week guaranteed. And again, remember, my first flat rate week was – I booked 7 hours. And not even like, hey, man, we're going to float you, you know, until you get practice. Nah, that's what you get, 7 hours.
And those are the parts that have to change and that I think 100%. There's some urgency from some companies. But,
yes. It's not there yet, though.
No, but it's far from.
Because I know some independent, and I feel like it's coming more from the independent side than the dealer side. Because I know, and again, if I can name drop the bad, I'll name drop the good. Like Seth Thorson, I know that guy will guarantee you your 40 hours until
in the toolbox, right? When you walk into a shop, yeah.
Yep.
Those are the guys that, you know, no matter what. Like again, like I'll talk all the bad stuff, but I'm not gonna not mention the good stuff. There's a guy here called Eric Moss. He runs amazing operation. Dutch Silverstein, like there are some gems in our industry, right? But those are the guys that we need to push to be like and hope that we're able to follow the lead and break the molds and be able to say, yeah, man, you know, come go work at that company, man. You'll be set for life.
Yeah. No, that's really well said. Those are great examples too.
Yeah. And I'm thinking off the top of my head too, like obviously you have the whole spectrum of shops and I have some around here where I'd recommend somebody to go work and then the complete opposite too. And I don't think you'll ever totally get away from that, right? Like every industry is going to have its, you know, highs and lows, but yeah, let's model the people that are doing it right. like a guy like Dutch or Seth or, you know, so on and so forth. Like, okay, they got this figured out. Yeah. And that's the thing is I'm not a star at the business side of things to make all that happen either. And so we got to work with those people who understand it to create something like that. To create an environment where a young person come in and be successful. Cause I wouldn't know how to make it. Like,
I'm still trying.
I just hired my first guy, and I'll be totally honest, I'm winging it a lot of the time. So,
oh, that's everybody. You know, it makes me think of the last time we talked, Sean, on here, and you had asked me, you know, some awesome questions about business, and yeah, I just always feel like I'm not the guy.
I for sure ain't the fucking guy. you need to figure out how to clone a module. I'm your guy. But in terms of business and ARO and all this other shit, nah, bro. You can
I admire the guys that have that ability to just see the big picture on the business side. I really envy that.
Me too. I really do. It's not for me, man. And I've said this like numerous times. If I were able to find a place that paid me kind of like somewhere in the range I wanted to, I think I'd be better served, man. Because I don't know. Sometimes this business shits for the birds, man. Mm-hmm. And I'm the windshield half the time.
Yeah, the numbers and stuff like that, and the books and all that stuff. I definitely don't enjoy it. It's a necessary evil to, you know, do your own thing. But it's not something I get excited about when I wake up in the morning. Man, I really want to, do my
close payroll,
yeah.
File quarterlies.
Yeah, can't wait to talk to my tax guy.
Yeah. Ugh. But yeah, no, it's an interesting place. But you know, the more we talk about it like this, and the more there's guys like you, Sean, who are willing to entertain these topics, who, you know, we might get some positive feedback, we might get some negative feedback. But at the end of the day, man, it's like the truth shall set you free. It's just gonna piss you off first.
Very well said, and that's what I'm hoping to get out there is just let's get our, you know, honesty out there. And maybe inspire some people to do some of the things that we're talking about. You know, that's the only way we're going to do it is if we all kind of do our part, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I hope so, sir.
Cool. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate you taking the time with me this evening.
Yeah, no problem.
It was a lot of fun. Appreciate you having us on here and
always a good time.
Share some thoughts and more.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, anytime. Anytime you're welcome, both of you. All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. That was definitely one of my favorite talks in recent memory. Great stuff to ponder and think about as we're going about our lives, both in the repair world and in our, kind of our social side of the automotive world. The part that really stuck with me after this talk, you know, was what we were talking about with, you know, the true value in a particular skill and what we should be seeking out. And I think it really is that thing that, you know, you got to put some work in to figure it out. There's no way around it in order to accomplish something like diagnostics, right? And Pedro laid that out in the episode is like, okay, you can go in and diagnose something. You can show somebody how you did it. And okay, if they have that exact same problem, they can get to the conclusion, but they're not going to be able to perform that diagnostic process the same way you did without, you know, months, years of repetition and work and honing their skills and training and all that stuff, right? And so diagnostics isn't the only way, but it is definitely, I think, one of the main things that we can focus on. But with that, of course, charging correctly for what we're doing. And there's a whole other discussion that goes into that, of course. But the other takeaways I got from this is, you know, being considerate of people's time, of course, if you're going to ask for help, you know, understand that, you know, everybody's busy, everybody's got a lot going on. And if someone is, you know, kind enough to share their knowledge and their information with you, number one, don't go, you know, share that information like it was your own to be the man. And don't go posting it in public places, you know, without checking with the person that you got the information from, you know, respecting the person that really put in the work to figure something out. But also, you know, if you're going to, you know, again, take the time out of somebody's day and request knowledge for somebody that put in a ton of work, to also reciprocate that as much as possible. You know, we didn't talk a whole lot about that in the episode, but yeah, I mean, if I'm going to be part of a group or I'm friends with somebody, I'm asking for something, you know, I don't necessarily expect anything back if someone's asking me of me, but if I'm in a group and I'm taking knowledge, I want to try my best to, at some point or another, you know, reciprocate in some way. And it's tough when I'm dealing with somebody who's way smarter than me and the stuff I have to offer, probably they've already got that figured out. But to be seeking that out in some way, okay, like how can I reciprocate? How can I, you know, contribute back to someone that's sharing knowledge with me? Again, going back to what I said, first thing is respecting that knowledge and not going out and spreading it, you know, without consent from where you got it from, and giving that respect to the person who figured out how to do, you know, whatever you're working on, right? Cloning a module, programming a module, diagnostic, doesn't matter. But those are my final thoughts on it. Hopefully you enjoyed that episode. I thought it was really good stuff to think about. Finally, I'd like to thank everybody for listening and all the feedback I get back on the show. I try to get back to everybody. I know I don't always in a timely manner, but I'll do my best. Other than that, let's all get out there, start fixing the world one car at a time.